listening to The Fret Files, the Guitar Workshop Podcast with Eric Daw.
Send in your question or comment. To participate in the show, you can text or call 757-774-8482. Or to email the show, you can go to my website, ericdaw.com. That's ericdaw.com. Click the contact link and send your question or comment there. We'll use it as part of the show. Indeed, welcome to the show. It's the Fret Files podcast, your favorite guitar tech podcast. My name is Eric Daw. I'm a longtime guitar builder and repairman, and my co-host today is the lovely and talented Mr. Nat. Hello, oh. Nat.
Hello. Thank you for that warm greeting.
Well, thank you for being here.
It's nice. Greetings. I will read the listeners' questions, and Eric will answer them the best he can, drawing on his experience and opinions. I gotta ask you, I hope you're prepared. What's on your bench lately, Eric?
You know what's on my bench? I thought I'd tell people this.
Guitars.
People use all different kinds of material to put guitars on their workbench.
Oh, yeah.
Some guys use carpet. They'll carpet their bench.
Yeah, like rust shag carpet or something. That'd be kind of cool.
Some guys use like neoprene.
Oh, spongy.
Foam.
Yeah, like mouse pad stuff.
Some people buy like, you know, store-bought Stumac kind of, you know, a thing that they ship you in a tube and you roll it out and it has a neck support.
Branded guitar holder thingy.
I thought I would tell people what I do to rest guitars on my bench, right? Now, I do have a carpeted bench.
Mm-hmm.
I have a bench that I built and then I carpeted the top.
Moderately, not like deep pile.
But when, it's just, it's like the kind of carpet you'd have in a school.
Yeah.
You know?
Somewhat industrial.
That kind of industrial carpet that you would, you'd clean your pencil eraser on.
Yeah. Gosh, that does a good job.
That's Did good you visual. Do that in school?
Oh, yeah. It was nice.
Mm-hmm. One of the teachers told me that that's what that carpet was for. Carpet is specifically designed
to
clean pencil erasers.
Yeah, they didn't always have carpet in there. But that, thanks, teacher.
So it is carpeted, but here's what I've done. And I've been doing this for years, and I don't think I've ever mentioned it on the show. I don't like to just use the carpeted surface, because what happens over time, as you work on guitars, you'll get little nicks and shards and detritus.
Detritus, that's the word.
All kinds of, metal shavings and this and that. And
crud.
Yeah. In the carpet. And pretty soon, that can start to ding up and scratch up a guitar finish.
Mm-hmm.
So I use something on top of the carpet to lay the guitar on. And what I have done, I started doing this years ago, I cut a piece of plywood the exact same size as a standard pillowcase.
Oh?
Yeah. And then I wrapped that in a towel.
Okay.
And then I put a pillowcase over that, right? And then when I'm at the thrift store, anytime I'm out and I see cheap pillowcases, I'll buy a bunch of them. And then you've got like disposable workbench covers,
And
like a slip cover for your little workbench pad.
A slip cover, and it's kind of clean, and oh, that's good.
Because they end up getting, you know, like solvents and solder blobs and stains and
fret file. Shavings.
Fret shavings, sure. The very, very tip of an X-Acto knife, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because those like to splinter off and go shooting across your shop.
Yeah, you'll never see them again. Well, that is literally what's on your bench.
Yeah, so I use a pillowcase over a piece of plywood wrapped in a towel, and then I change out the pillowcase every now and then.
Well,
but,
that's a good tip.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's just a crazy thing. But... what I've been working on the bench lately.
Oh, further answers. I like
is,
this.
Is a lot of cracked acoustic guitars. I mean, this is the time of year, yeah. You know, and people are always surprised. Like, what? I should be humidifying my guitar?
Boy, it was a struggle this year.
Because they'll call me up and they'll say, I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but my guitar cracked. And then I'll explain it to them. And they always tell me, everyone always tells me, boy, I feel really dumb that I didn't know this.
Well, it's a pretty big moral failing to crack an acoustic guitar.
And I'll say, listen, don't, because it's only you and every other guitar player who's ever called me.
This is true.
Who doesn't humidify their acoustic guitar.
This
so,
is true.
This is your reminder. Keep your guitars humidified. Now, you might be saying, Eric, I've had acoustic guitars for years, and I've never had a crack. I've never had to worry about it.
Yeah, you don't know my situation.
Just you wait.
Yeah.
If you live in a dry climate, it can catch up with you. You'll even a vintage guitar that's been acclimated to whatever climate you've been in for a long time, man, they'll crack. I've seen it happen. Or here's another thing to think about. If you have me work on your vintage guitar that is crack-free, but you don't humidify it, that thing's super dry, and when I get in there and start torquing on it to try to reset the neck...
Oh, I shudder to think.
You know?
Sounds?
As soon as somebody checks in an acoustic guitar, the very first thing I do is put a humidifier in the sound hole if it doesn't have one.
Yeah, you'd have to. That's good.
Ugh. That's a good practice if you are running a repair shop. Mm-hmm. If you've got an acoustic guitar checked in your possession, put a sound hole humidifier in there.
Get it up to that baseline.
Yeah.
For sure.
What else have I been working on? A lot of refinish projects that...
You love those.
I don't. I think I'm going to stop taking them.
I think you might have said that before.
They take as much, if not more, time to do than making a custom guitar, and I can't charge as much as I can for a custom guitar. It's really dumb from an economic standpoint that I even do that. You know?
Yeah.
Like that, there's a Strat that I've been working on refinishing. I think you helped me.
The black one.
Last week or the week before, trying to strip the finish off.
Yeah.
It wasn't even paint.
No,
I think
unnatural.
I think that was truck bed coating. Someone had sprayed it with like black rubberized or industrial. Like,
yeah, or Plasti Dip or something.
Something so nasty.
And it didn't respond normally to the solvent and gosh.
That was so hard to strip that crap off of there.
That yuck.
That guitar is going to change the way I do things going forward. If you want me to refinish your guitar, you strip it, then send it to me.
Hey, that they're going to wreck them.
This is grunt
work. That's a good idea.
Well, and if you wreck it, then...
Yeah, my condolences, but wasn't me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is surprisingly unrewarding. Like, you think, I can get this off there, but no, it's awful.
Well, and it's about as manual labor of a task as guitar repair gets.
It really is. I wondered, let's put it out there to the listeners, because they're thinking, no, I just do it just like this, and it's really easy. I would invite comments on how easy it is for you.
Well, it depends on the paint. I mean, I've been sent things to refinish before that have some kind of finish that you literally can just put lacquer thinner on a rag and wipe the finish off.
You could do that on your custom guitars, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this black Strat was coated in some kind of, like, I'm seriously, truck bed coating.
Yeah, it was
like
gunk.
Yeah.
It was unnatural. So I wonder if, and it seems like you run into refinishes of refinishes.
Oh, yes. Right.
So
yes,
refinishes
yes.
are never satisfying, like, 10 years ago or 20 years ago, and then they put on this gnarly urethane or some awful thing.
Well, that's why they want me to do it in the first place, because it's been poorly refinished.
It's awful, and it's already damaged goods. Yeah.
Not fun. Anyway, that's all right. Listen to me complaining about my cool job that I love and enjoy.
Yeah, there's guitars coming in and out of there. It's kind of fun.
I do. I'm making a batch of Bakelite 50s replica Telecaster pickguards right now.
Oh, those are cool.
They're fun.
Mm-hmm. Those are neat, and they really do lend some authenticity and a little original flair to those things.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Especially when they're done up, you know, with the wear and that sort of thing. It looks nice.
Well, and it's hard to find accurate ones. Accurately aged and, you know, looking right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I started making them myself. I would have paid somebody else to do it.
Yeah, huh?
But, and every time I do this, I'm like, okay, I guess I make these now.
Yeah, it's got some, there's some kind of sheen differences in the wear areas, and yeah, it's not, but it does take some nuance. It's good.
But every time I do that, whether it's those Gibson amp handles that I started remaking, or whether it's Bakelite pickguards, or whether it's pickups, because I couldn't find pickups that I wanted exactly, you know, so then I think, well, as long as I am making myself some of these, I guess I offer them for sale now too, you know?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Plus, it's a little, what do you call it? Not a societal duty, but it's helping out the world a little bit to have those handles and the good pick guards.
It helps me too when I got to go down to the grocery store and stock up the fridge.
Right on.
Yeah.
Get some tea.
We have questions.
Oh, yeah?
Do we have any audio ones? Do we have answers or just questions?
We can circle them around so they think it's an answer.
I do have, so here's what happened. So somebody sent me, there's a reason why there's a number to call. 757-774-8482. You call, you leave a message. I'm kind of a Luddite, guys. I know I have a podcast, but we're recording it on a 15-year-old laptop. I have a flip phone. Yeah. Seriously, guys. Yeah.
Atlas stands from 1962.
Yeah, I'm not a techno guy. So somebody sent me a voicemail in an email, but I can't play it on any of my devices.
We don't know why.
So, and Nat has the newest, neatest gadgets.
He's got
a smartphone here.
It's got a virtual button.
Is this an Apple thing?
It is.
So I forwarded the message to him so he can play it on his phone. So what we're going to do is we're going to play this message from his phone right into the microphone.
We're going to go analog. Don't tell him the secrets.
We're going right around these compatibility.
Yeah. We're sidestepping it.
We're going to try. All right. We have a call. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Eric. This is Miles in Arlington, Virginia. I've attached a photo of my Recording King guitar, and you can see it's got a ding in the finish. I'm wondering what, if anything, I should do about this, or if I should just leave it alone. Look forward to hearing what you have to say. Thanks.
Right on.
That totally worked.
That was Nat's phone held up to my microphone.
Don't demystify it. That was a guy calling.
That was a guy calling on the phone. Mm-hmm. It's a podcast. Yep. It's, you know.
You got a ding.
Yeah, he sent me a picture. The picture I could see.
And a Recording King guitar. How cool. How old is this thing?
Well, I'm assuming he's talking about one of the reissues.
Oh, I had one for a little bit. They're pretty good.
Yeah, because Recording King was a brand
like in the 30s.
Yeah.
Really old.
But somebody, some person that's smarter than I am, bought the rights to the name and now they're having Court or whoever make these, you know, Recording King guitars. Samick.
I kind of like how that's your default for like a disreputable but kind of okay guitar is a Court.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everybody knows
consistent
exactly what you mean.
Consistent mediocrity.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like the Yoplait.
It's sort of okay.
It's like Yoplait yogurt. It's like,
yeah,
you know what you're getting.
It's maybe technically yogurt.
It's not going to blow your mind.
Right. You can set it in the corner of a dorm room or something. All right.
Shelf stable. Yep. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at the ding here.
Yeah, it's a little dingy.
It's just a little ding, like the corner of a cabinet or a dresser hit it or something. Mm-hmm. Who knows what. Yeah. But if that were my guitar, I would seep super glue in there, probably thin viscosity super glue, and that would wick into all the little bits and pieces and fragments of this ding.
Yeah, because it's not uniform. It's got a few little kind of gougy crater thingies.
I'm going to use this picture as the image for the show notes of the podcast.
I don't know so if you ought to do that.
If you go to fretfiles.com, you can see this ding. And I know you want to. I know how bad you want to see this ding on this Samick recording king. But that's what I would do. I would wick
super glue.
Yeah. What is it called? Viscosity.
The drippy kind.
Light viscosity? What is it called? It's thin. Thin
name.
The thin viscosity super glue. I like Glue Boost. GLUBOOST.
It's fun to say, too.
They also, Stuart McDonald sells very good cyanoacrylate super glue as well. And they have the thin viscosity. You could get it there if you want. But that's what I would do. I would wick that in, let it dry. You know, don't go nuts. Just do a little bit, and then do it again, and then do it again. And then, once it's built up, like, higher than the surrounding finish, then you can take a razor blade and scrape it smooth.
Oh, really?
With the surrounding finish. Yeah, what I do is I'll put tape on the edges, around the edges of
the outer edges of
a razor blade, so that if you sat that razor blade right on the finish, the tape is floating. It's making the razor blade float just the width, just the thickness of tape above the finish. And then you can scrape that across and smooth it out. And then you could sand it with really fine sandpaper and take some polish and polish it out. It won't disappear, but it'll look better.
Well, good tip.
That's what I would do with it. Yeah.
Good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks for the call that we had to run through Nat's phone.
High technical call.
Yeah, it was good.
We got through it.
All righty. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Letters. We get letters. We get stacks and stacks of letters.
Hi, Eric.
Hi.
Thank you. I have a question for the pickup guru.
Is that me?
It ain't me. Can a humbucker pickup and a single coil pickup be out of phase with each other? I want to put a humbucker in the bridge position of my Strat, and I'm wondering if I need to worry about phase issues. Thanks, Lee.
Wow, the first question, and it breaks my brain.
Yeah, well, humbuckers can be out of phase with each other.
Yeah, because it's two coils.
Yeah, so you can... So there's a humbucking coil, and the other one has a certain polarity or phase, a winding orientation, right?
Yeah. But if we're talking about... So say you've got a guitar that has a humbucker and a single coil.
Mm-hmm.
So technically it has three coils.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Is that the wrong way to think about it?
I think so.
I think they can be out of phase because a humbucker, when it's wired up, the way it's wired up, it kind of acts as though it were one cohesive unit.
Right. It's kind of like a dummy coil, isn't it? It's not. Well, no, it's the way that they're together, but that bucks the hum.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Man, we ought to research one of these days.
You'd think I would know this right off the top of my head.
But how about this? Humbucker pickups can be out of phase with each other.
Oh, sure.
That means it can be out of phase with something else.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that's a great point. Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
See that?
Yes. Hey, Nat, you're hired.
I know. Logic.
A humbucker pickup can absolutely be out of phase with any other pickup, whether it's a P90 or a Strat pickup or a humbucker.
Phase.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It
right.
It does have a phase.
Yeah. Yeah, good
one.
We
don't know how it works. It's magic, but it does have
good one. Thanks, Lee. Maybe I should read the questions and you should answer them.
Well, we should probably look him up on Wikipedia for a second.
This is why I have you on the podcast.
Well, it helps. You bounce ideas off each other, and one guy stalls and tries to think, look up at the ceiling. Let me try this one. Hi, Eric and Nat. I noticed a trend among boutique guitar makers where they are touting a new finishing technique where the grain is accentuated by means of spraying finish without doing pore filler. I just saw this the other day. It's interesting.
Have you seen this?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a thing now.
And they advertise it.
Yeah.
This is interesting. I wish I could have thought of a great analogy like this is, I don't know, like a handleless mug or something. I don't know.
I'll think of one.
Think of one. This is like, I don't know, tires that are pre-worn or something. I don't know. It gives the grain of the ash grain marks that are sunk into the finish. Yeah, it does. I'm curious, have you seen this? What is your take on this practice? Do you think it looks good? Do you think it's hype? Okay, so we haven't seen any, you know, positive or negative valence on this thing. We don't know. But it's implied in any marketing that this is newer, better, or whatever. Sorry, that was a lot of editorializing. That's not what this guy said. Do you think it's hype? Is there any tonal reason to do it this way? Thanks, Jerry in Shreveport, L.A. That's the one in Louisiana.
They say it Louisiana.
Yeah, they do.
Everybody else that's not from there says Louisiana.
Yeah, and then if you try to say it like too much Narlins or something instead of New Orleans, then you're not from there.
Then you're a real out-of-towner.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a shibboleth. Have you heard that term?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, so we may not say it that way.
Right.
We're not Jerry Lee Lewis.
It's bordering on cultural appropriation.
Yeah, it's dang near. I wished we could.
Jerry in Shreveport.
Yep.
I tell you what, Jerry, I think it's hype. I have seen it, and I'll tell you what I think is going on with this is pore filling is a pain in the butt, and it's labor intensive.
It's a step.
And it's lazy.
Dang it.
To say, hey, look at this. Look at this cool feature we're doing with our guitars where we didn't do pore filler. That dang pore filler gunking up your tone.
Yeah. Look at it. This sinks into the grain.
Just wood and paint. Yeah. Just wood and paint.
And urethane or whatever.
Yeah. No, this is laziness, I think, that's being marketed as some new, better thing. And I think it looks like crap. That's my opinion. Now, you might have noticed I changed the intro of the show where Nat says instead of saying drawing on his experience as a luthier, he says drawing on his experience and opinions.
Yeah, I noticed that.
There's a lot of opinions on this show.
Yeah, I emphasize it.
And this is just one of them. I think it's laziness. Now, if you are a boutique guitar maker and you're doing this and you're offended by this, I'm very sorry, but that's just my opinion, and you're entitled to yours. You know?
Yeah.
So let's all be friends, but that's my opinion. What did you think about it when you saw it?
Hard not to see it that way. Well, I saw these Ibanez acoustic guitars that I think were mahogany tops, so it's darker and very grainy, you know, big pores, marketed as open pore, which is questionable. How far did that get in the marketing committee? Is there another term we could use besides open pore? Could we say natural or something? I don't know. But I don't know. That seems too somehow bodily. I don't know. But having done pore filler, I recognize that how about this? The guy who was supposed to do pore filler is like, no, boss, listen, I got an idea.
What if we just forgot. Skip this part?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Hey, you forgot to do the pore filler on this one, and the finish is sunk into the ash grain. This is absurd. And the guy's like, no, I got an idea. It's called open pore.
Yeah. Let's market this as, and no, to answer your question, Jerry, there's not any tonal reason to do it that way.
Or like breathing, not, like skin or something. Come on.
It's not going to change the way your guitar resonates at all. Goodness, no.
And it doesn't look great if it sinks in.
No, I think it looks bad.
Oh, and you know what I didn't understand? This is my role here, is like to be the neophyte or not know anything. I was surprised that there's pore filler in the blondest finishes that you do.
Oh, yeah.
Where you still see grain. So pore filler, it doesn't obliterate the pores. You know, it doesn't obliterate the... It keeps the finish from sinking in, but it doesn't obliterate the grain.
No.
Entirely, as one might think.
No, in fact, it oftentimes accentuates the grain. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll put a little bit of brown stain in the pore filler and make it a little bit darker to actually make the grain pop through a transparent finish.
Yeah.
Depending on what the grain is looking like. I had to refinish a 50s telly once that I filled the pores and then started spraying finish and you could not see the grain.
Yeah, that's unacceptable. So bring it back.
So I had to
you still start over
and put, you know, I put some brown stain in the pore filler.
Well, how neat.
To make the grain pop. Yeah. No, but, really, pore filler's main purpose is to make the finish smooth.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also accentuate the grain if it's a slightly different hue than the wood.
And you want that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Good one.
Let's do another one.
I will try one. Question for Fret Files.
That's us.
I like the formality. How do I get rid of pick marks on the body of my nitro finished guitar above the pick guard? Did I do that right?
Mm-hmm.
In particular, one of them is a 59 Fender reissue Strat.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some luck with Meguiar's compounds. I think that's the car stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I use that stuff.
And elbow grease with a microfiber cloth, but it takes a lot of time and work. Is there any way to speed this up? Power tools? Better pad or compound? What do you do? I don't care about this on guitars that I plan to keep, but feel it would be best to clean this up on guitars that I plan on selling. Huh. Thanks in advance. Fan of the show, Tony J. Formicola in Marion, New York. He's got J as a nickname for Tony.
I wouldn't have known that.
I wouldn't have guessed.
No. No.
I thought it'd be like Tony's a nickname for Anthony.
Tony J.
Yeah.
All the way from New York. You've already discovered the method I'm using. That's what I use, is polishing compound in a rag. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, I don't know how aggressively you're strumming and what pick you're using. Maybe you're going after it a little too heavy there, Tony. But no, I use Meguiar's. I think three different grits. I've got three bottles of Meguiar's. There's the mirror glaze, which is for very fine polishing. And then I've got a heavier duty, I think it's just called polishing compound. Yeah. And then one that's specifically for buffing wheels.
Okay.
You know.
And
so,
he did say compounds, plural, like he knows there are kind of grades or grits of it.
Mm.
But that may be, he may not have the exact same, you know, it's kind of like going up through the grits in sandpaper.
Yeah, so if you start with, what I do is I use the medium one, and that takes care of it pretty quick, and then use mirror glaze after that, and it smooths it out. You know, you can go after it with a buffing wheel, but there's a couple problems with that. One is that can get out of hand pretty fast.
Oh, yeah?
And you can only buff it so many times before you burn through the finish.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I hope I never have to do that. That sounds dangerous.
Buffers can get pretty serious, man.
Okay.
And the other thing about it is, a lot of times, you know, to buff it really properly, you've got to take off the strings, you got to take off the pick guard.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more trouble than doing it by hand. So, yeah, good clean microfiber cloth and some Meguiar's polishing compound. That's what I would do, man, and that's what I do in my shop. So, you're already onto it. Let's take a little break.
Okay.
What do you say?
I agree.
Yes. All right, let's take a little break and we'll be right back with more.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Thunder Road Guitars is based in Seattle, but they ship guitars all over the world. I've known Frank at Thunder Road Guitars for over 20 years, and this guy is as solid as they come. He's a straight shooter. They're real people offering real service. Thunder Road Guitars carries excellent used, vintage, new, and rare instruments, as well as amplifiers and a wide selection of pedals. Thunder Road Guitars is your best source for fine, used, vintage, and new guitars. They're an independently owned family business that thrives on great customer service and the love of instruments. Check them out online, thunderroadguitars.com. Give Frank a call. Tell them you heard it on the Fret Files podcast. In fact, they have a promo code. If you buy anything on their website, that's thunderroadguitars.com, use my promo code, FRETFILES. All one word, FRETFILES, for 10% off. That's thunderroadguitars.com, or you can always give them a call at 206-678-5248. Guys, my favorite beverage, by far, my favorite beverage, besides water, my favorite beverage is coffee. And my favorite brand of coffee is Apex. Check out Apex Coffee online. Go to apexcoffeeroasters.com. They ship coffee, and this is premium. This is the, I think it's the best coffee you can, it's my favorite, the best coffee. They'll ship it to you. They ship it to me once a month. The postman brings me Apex Coffee, and it's just as fresh as can be, and it's the most delicious, beautiful coffee. Check it out. ApexCoffeeRoasters.com. They're based in Waco, Texas, but you don't have to be. They'll ship it right to you. While you're there, you can use my promo code PINUP, that's P-I-N-U-P, to get 10% off your order. Check it out, ApexCoffeeRoasters.com. Hey, I was going to tell you, so I recently re-upped my subscription to the Fretboard Journal.
Oh, I've been meaning to do that.
You got to. You know, it's actually the only guitar magazine that I subscribe to anymore.
Oh, it's so good. Yes. Yes.
It's so good. But I recently called into the TAVA podcast, The Truth About Vintage Amps.
I've vaguely heard of it, yes.
Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal, puts out that podcast with amp tech Skip Simmons. And I called over there because I love that podcast so much. It's so good. And I love the Fretboard Journal so much that I wanted to give those guys a discount code for the book. And I will give my listeners here the same discount code. If you go to solidsoundbook.com, you can use the discount code for the month of March, TAVA. It's the Truth About Vintage Amps podcast. Mm-hmm. And you get free shipping domestically in the U.S. for my book.
Great.
Yeah, but that's not to promote my own book. I'm telling you. The Fretboard Journal really is a wonderful magazine, and I enjoy every issue. Anyhow, let's read a question.
Greetings, lads.
Lads?
Yeah, this is a good one.
This must be from England.
Yeah, I skipped to the end, and spoiler alert, it ain't. Oh. May I rant for a moment? You may. I can't stand it when the nuts are glued in with super glue. I do a lot of bone nut replacements in my shop, and when I go to remove the old nuts, they are almost always glued in solidly.
Hmm.
Then I have to try to extract said glued in nut, and they almost always chip and shatter in the process. My preference is a snug fitting nut, like a saddle on an acoustic, that doesn't require swear words when the time comes to remove it. This is just my 2 cents. Give us yours. Thanks, Gene. In Kansas City, unless Gene. That's John or something like that. You think it's
Gene?
Yeah, but Gene, the lads like, and the Gene
like
Genie,
like yeah. Gene Shepherd.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Maybe.
Could be.
I don't know.
12th Street and Vine in Kansas City.
Oh, you're thinking the other Gene Shepherd, the singer.
Well, that's G-E-N-E, isn't it? Shepherd's lady.
Gene Shepherd, the lady singer.
Yeah.
And then Gene Shepherd, the radio. Legendary radio host who
was G E N E.
It's J E A N. And
well, I'm out.
Do you know who he is?
I must not.
He was on a New York. He was on WOR New York, which covered half the country.
Oh wow!
In the '70s, and he's like a raconteur.
Oh, a fun guy.
Told stories for 45 minutes.
He had some flair.
One of his stories was about Red Ryder, BB gun, Christmas present.
Is that?
That got turned into the movie A Christmas Story.
No kidding.
Yeah. Gene Shepard is who originated that movie. It's a story that he used to tell about his childhood. And then he later put it in a book called In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash.
That's right. How neat.
Which is a great book. Gene Shepard's a cool guy. His old recordings of his radio show are on Spotify. If you really want to get nerdy, it's fun. It is fun. He was a cool guy. Anyway, Gene.
That's not why we called.
That's not what you asked. What was his question?
What do you think about these people that are gluing these dang nuts in with super glue?
Gene in Kansas City can't stand it.
Yeah.
When nuts are glued in.
You're getting them out, they break, and it's awful.
Well, I agree to disagree, Gene.
Oh, come on.
On this.
You had to be contrarian. I was with him.
This is a little bit, to me, this is a little bit like complaining that the tire shop used all the lug nuts to put the tire back on. Like, that's going to be so hard to get off.
Well, or at least over-tighten them, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, you need it
solid,
don't you?
The nut has to be glued in, because what if you go to bend a note down there on the second fret and do a real heavy bend? That bone nut is going to shoot across the room like it's an arrow shot out of a bow.
It's such a critical
guitar.
What do you call it? Like an anchor point for that vibration thing, and it transmits. Okay, yeah,
In my world, nuts have to be glued in.
Okay,
they have to be.
Sorry, they chip and shatter.
They have to be glued in. It's just the only time that I really see a lot of classical guitar luthiers
persons
will put a bone nut in there that's not glued in, and I guess fine, whatever. I'm not going to argue with anybody, but I always put a couple dots of super glue on a nut and glue it in, always.
Well, that might be an important difference, is a couple dots versus gunk all the way around. And you're talking mostly just on the bottom, right?
Yeah, but it needs to be well fit.
Yeah.
It needs to be
like
he's
saying, like a saddle.
Tight, snug fit, you know? And it needs to be making contact everywhere, right? And then if you put just a couple dots here and there, what happens is the super glue, when the nut hits it and compresses it, the super glue spreads.
It kind of wicks, you know, all over, yeah.
And so, yeah, it should be solidly glued in, is my opinion.
I'm persuaded.
Plus, I like, not only, for the fact that it needs to stay put, but it transfers string energy to the rest of the guitar better.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah, and I couldn't think of a good word for it. It's like the fulcrum point for that, or the anchor, and yes, it transmits that. And it can't be wobbly or goofy or no funny business.
Yeah, I know I've talked about this on the show before, but to me, that's kind of my theory behind what makes a guitar sound good, is everything is solid. The frets can't wiggle at all. The bridge can't have loose parts.
No extraneous movement.
That's going to suck up string energy is going to rob you of tone and sustain.
I'm with you.
Yeah. And so nuts have to be glued in. Sorry, that's my opinion, Gene. But hey, you do you, man.
No, don't anybody do that. You know, it's pretty clear that I just believe whatever the last guy said. Well, I'm with you. I better try another.
Yeah, that was a real roller coaster ride
you. Wasn't it? I'm trying to get along. I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds awful. Why would people glue those things in? And you're like, well, you have to.
Yeah, oh, that's my opinion.
That's why you have to. Yeah. Let me try this one, see if I'll be less agreeable. Hi, Eric. I've seen ads for fret leveling tools and fret polishing tools that are advertised as being able to be used with the strings still on the guitar, tuned up to tension? Really? Please tell us why this is a stupid and lazy idea. Thanks, Julian. Now, I'm glad he didn't say, I think this is okay, and I'd be like, well, I'm with you. and then you didn't need to be prompted to say why it's stupid and lazy.
I think he said it all.
He's been reading your mail.
Please tell us why this is a stupid and lazy idea. Yeah, it harkens back to the, let's skip the pore filler and tell him it's new and improved.
Well, this guy's participating in the show. That's pretty helpful.
I like it, yeah. No, you can't do a proper fret level with strings on.
And up to tension.
Sorry.
A little bit, and you can't move them. And
no.
Heck.
This is for like guys who just really have a little luthier hobby, and they buy a couple little tools from Stumac, and they want to, you know, fiddle on their guitars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should try that pickleball. That's sweeping the country. I'm just trying to help.
You know, frisbee golf, something.
You know, this reminds me. I went to a conference where they had this teaching conference where they got these keynote speakers, and they're all just mind-blowing, like TED Talks. Every TED Talk, you're like, why don't we do everything that way? This is going to be revolutionized everything. Well, the lady said, real smart, really neat. Anyway, I better not go on about it, but she said, let's never say obviously or clearly, because obviously and clearly it's not. It's just not. Anything that's obvious to you,
yeah,
it's just not to everyone.
Hmm.
So sometimes we need to say why it's stupid and lazy.
I have to watch what I know I say silly things, but I was trying to listen to a podcast today that I won't say who it was, but yeah. This lady being interviewed kept saying at the end of the day,
yeah, man.
At the end of the day, you have to do this. And at the end of the day, it's always about that. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to have to think about what you did. And at the end of the day,
yeah,
wow.
Throw away garbage, vapid phrases.
I don't know.
At the end of the day, are obviously.
How we got on that, but we did.
Well, that was a halfway good aside. I better move on. Thanks, Julian. That's a good one. Thanks for the prompting. Hi, Eric. Big fan of the podcast. Not sure if you've answered this before, but
how big of a fan are you then?
Well,
no, I'm just kidding.
Couldn't resist.
I don't know. I don't know what I've answered or not. These could all be repeat questions for all any of us know.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
What happened last month?
No, 10 years I've been doing this silly podcast. I don't know if I've answered anything.
But thanks for asking. But I was wondering if you could give your opinion on the Sorkin or Bowtie Bridge. Are there any advantages or disadvantages to this type of bridge compared to an ABR1?
Yeah.
Thanks, James in Sudbury, Ontario, Canada. Good one. ABR. Is that the stuff that goes like in a Gibson-style guitar, ABR?
Yeah, an ABR is also known as a Tune-O-Matic.
Oh, okay,
That's the Gibson.
You know, I had a vague notion of that.
Yeah, that's the famous Gibson bridge.
Okay.
Do you know what a Sorkin bridge is or a Bowtie bridge?
No idea.
It's this unit. I just Googled it. I just Googled it for you. Let me show you.
It's a little dog bony, isn't it?
Can you see it?
Yeah. More rounded. Does it wobble? Does it do things?
It's a Bigsby product. I don't know why they call it Sorkin.
It's got to be a guy's name.
It's got to be. Yeah.
It's like Bigsby.
Yeah. It's got to be a guy's name. But, you know, famously, this was the bridge that's on John Lennon's little original Rickenbacker 325.
Wow, how arcane. Like an extremely rare guitar and then a replacement rare.
Well, and he put it on. He took off it had a Kaufman Vibrola, and he took that off and put on a horseshoe Bigsby. And then put on this Bowtie Sorkin bridge.
Huh.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to work with the wobbly Bigsby thing, huh?
Yeah. And they have, they don't sit flat on the thumb wheels. They come down to a point, so they're able to rock back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so they're supposed to be beneficial,
slightly better
to yeah. you know for using a Bigsby, but I don't like them. That's my opinion on them. I think that they look super cool.
Yep,
it really is a good looking bridge.
That counts.
But there's almost no adjustability to it,
besides the intonation.
Well,
stagger.
It goes up and down.
Oh, and I see what you mean. Yeah,
you can intonate the entire thing at once, but you can't yeah. intonate each individual saddle
strings. Yeah,
and you can't raise and lower each individual string either, which you can't on an ABR1 either. But you're also stuck with this bridge. You're stuck with a pre-intonated ridge for a wound G.
Yeah, because it's old.
Which most people don't use anymore.
Yeah, no.
Some do.
No, not using it.
Yep. But, yeah, it's kind of an arcane thing. They're cool because they look cool, but I don't think I'd ever have one on a guitar because I'm just not. Unless you've got an arch top where you're using a wound G or something like that.
Yeah, how about that? And you insist on having the Bigsby type thing, right?
I mean,
you wouldn't use it without the accentuating the wobbliness, right?
Yeah, it's almost it really is kind of a hand in hand thing with a Bigsby.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Well, that's a good. I learned a thing.
Thanks, James.
That's a good one. Hi, Eric. I just bought your book. Solid Sound.
Oh, thank you.
Great read.
Nice.
Got one of them smiley face things.
Thank you so much.
Colon and the...
An emoji?
And a closed print. Yep. Yes. Is that what you call it? Anyway, at the Jazzmaster section, you provide your ideal diagram for reusing the existing components.
Yep.
What would a diagram look like for your ideal Jazzmaster if all components were available? I guess that means kind of starting from scratch, right? Yeah. Do you perhaps have a diagram of it? Thanks in advance. Kari. Is that how you say it? Kari?
Kari? Kari?
Kari. It's a long A, right? Kara.
In Denmark.
Denmark. We probably got relatives in Denmark, don't you?
Do they say Denmark in Denmark?
Well, they'd say Danemark or something like that.
Okay. Because, yeah. you know, most countries, they don't like... I mean, they don't call it Germany in Germany.
Or
you know this.
Or France. I'm pretty aware.
You don't often look Mexico. At me like I'm an idiot, but
oh, was
today's
I?
The day. No.
I absolutely didn't
kidding.
Mean to.
No, I'm just being silly for the sake of the podcast.
No, but isn't that funny?
Because Nat actually travels to, nobody knows this who's listening to the show, but Nat goes to Germany often and, well, not often, but he goes to Germany and he speaks German.
Go to Austria.
He speaks
yeah.
German and among other languages. Yeah. But, The Jazzmaster diagram that I put in the book, was just, I felt the need to redesign the original Fender design of a Jazzmaster because I think that it's a really weird wiring design.
Does it have switches?
It's super redundant. Toggles. So it has a rhythm circuit where you engage one switch and then now you're only using the neck pickup and you've got separate volume and tone controls for that circuit.
Okay. I think this is a Hofner do that too.
But in my world, you know, the question was, what would a diagram look like for your ideal Jazzmaster?
Right.
Well, that's assuming a lot of things.
Yeah, first stay of all, with it. Stay with it and give it a shot.
All right. if I were forced to play a Jazzmaster, let's just say that, and I could rewire it, I would just want a three-way toggle and a volume and tone control.
Yeah, like some guitars you know.
You know, there's I think that all the little flippy switches and extra knobs are redundant. That's why I redesigned it in the first place, you know. And my redesign of it is actually pretty. It would be pretty ideal for my playing because I like to have out of phase options, and that was one of the things that my redesign of that schematic did was it gave you an out of phase sound.
That'd be kind of neat on a Jazzmaster.
But Implied in this question is like, oh, are you going to put push-pull pots in and, you know, mini toggle switches and all this? And no.
And cool things.
I wouldn't want to do that. I would actually want to simplify it rather than make it more complicated. So that's my answer to that.
Oh, I think that was a good answer.
Yep. Well, and here's the other thing. In the back of that book, there are blank diagrams that have the components drawn, but no wires drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And you, over there in Denmark, can make a copy of that and draw in your own wiring.
It's like an adult coloring book.
Yeah, man. You make your own schematic. So there's blank schematics in the back of the book for you to experiment on your own.
How neat.
I know. I wish somebody had written this book for me 30 years ago.
That's why you had to do it.
I know.
Good one. Let's try this. That was a big wind-up. Hi, Eric and Nat. Thank you so much for the wonderful podcast. I discovered it in 2020, the year, during the first of our numerous COVID lockdowns.
Jeez.
Where it is? Oh, he's in Australia. Thankfully, I was able to walk on the many miles of bush tracks around our place. You could just go out. It's like just thinking, walking. I spent many hours walking and listening. See, that's good for you. Einstein used to love doing that. All those guys. So many guys were walkers.
This isn't part
and thinkers.
Of the email.
No,
it's Nat's aside.
You can tell.
Yeah, I hope so.
If I'm talking, I might be making it up. Okay, I did all this walking and listening, and to all the great podcasts. I have listened to every episode, and many, two or three times over.
Jeez.
We need a catalog. That's great. I recently received your Solid Sound book after a 2 to 3 month shipping delay.
Oh my God, why?
They got boats. Oh, maybe customs.
Oh, that could have been.
Who knows?
I wonder if...
A tiny little book in customs. It's a foreign country. Man.
Anyway, let's go with it.
Yeah. But the book's there, so that's nice. So there's this awful delay, and I can recommend it highly. I have a couple of T-style guitars, including a parts caster that I really love. I fired up my new variable temp soldering iron. They might say soldering, I think. Installed a four-way switch and used your schematic to add the series humbucker setting. Fantastic.
Oh, good.
Four-way really is pretty neat. It makes such a versatile guitar. I had it modded to reduce weight. Interesting. Oh, smuggler's telly. See that?
Mm-hmm.
Only to reduce weight, not to smuggle. By a local Melbourne luthier named David Paul. He also fitted it with his custom Orpheus pickups in a 60s telly style. Oh, that sounds cool. They are wonderful. He was a fantastic contributor to the Melbourne guitar scene. Tragically, David passed away, in December, and I wanted to acknowledge what a wonderful and skillful luthier, guitar tech, and human being he was.
Nice.
Anyway, your podcast adds value to the lives of those who listen, as well as educating us in the arcane and mysterious nuances of guitar science.
Hey.
Evan in Fairhaven, Victoria, Australia.
Evan, thanks for the nice note, dude.
That's a great one.
We do appreciate it. Yeah.
Really good one.
I can't imagine. Do you ever listen back to the show?
No, the therapist says never do that.
I have to sometimes because I have to edit things,
It's your job. No, I have a couple times, and it's not as bad as I fear. But it's a little, would the kids say cringeworthy? No, they don't say worthy. They just say cringe. Did you know that?
Jeez.
It makes you cringe.
It makes you recoil. Cringe.
Yeah. Shudder.
So what I'm saying is I can't imagine listening a few times to every episode. But
probably some great ones.
You know, we did some funny things over the years on the podcast.
Yeah.
I do remember that. Yeah. If this were any kind of professional show, we would.
Yeah, we would.
But we're not going to. Thanks for listening. And we appreciate the nice note. And that was a lovely tribute to David, David Paul, local Melbourne luthier who passed away. Yeah.
That is neat. And I appreciated his appreciation of the four-way switch.
Well, I raise my Apex coffee cup to David Paul.
Yeah. That is great. Thank you, Evan. Let's try another. Hi, Eric. Love the Fret Files.
Thank you.
Do you have a photo of the staple pickup that you repaired that you can share? Mm. My builder friend thinks that the staple is a single coil, but I said that it's a humbucker. Mm. Regards, Roger.
Mm.
What do you think about that?
Well, I didn't take a picture of it, but I think I can clear this up. So, I did recently rewind a vintage Hofner, or as they probably say over there, Hofner.
I think it's Hofner. It's got that O umlaut.
Hofner.
But no one says that, and if you do, you're kind of outed. It's a bit of a dandy.
Right.
So
it's cultural appropriation again.
Well, it's hard to know. How do you say Melbourne?
Don't know.
I don't even know. I'm
Melbourne.
I'm trying to be all right. There we are, staples.
Yeah. So anyhow, no, I didn't take a picture of it, and I did recently rewind a vintage Hofner bass pickup, but I misspoke on the last episode of the show. It wasn't a staple pickup. It was not. It was the other vintage Hofner bass pickup. It's called a 513B.
That does not have the same cachet or ring.
Which is indeed a single coil.
Oh. But what does it look like?
Well, please help. It has a little blade, and it doesn't have the staples. But the staple pickup is a humbucker. But that's not what I rewound. I rewound the 513B, the 513B, which is a single coil.
It doesn't have separate square staple-y things. It has one blade-y
thing. I guess I'll Google this to show Nat.
Put us on
this
shaky ground.
This is really interesting for the listener. This is the sound of me typing.
Yeah, put the show on hold so I can look at something that no one can see.
I'd say I'm going to use it in the show notes, but we're already going to use the ding.
There's a picture of a ding.
In the court.
It's too late.
It looks like this.
Yeah.
It's like a blade.
Oh, I am not aware of that one.
Yeah.
Huh.
It has like a blade.
Does it have umlauts on the O right there?
Yes.
I wasn't even lying.
Nope. It has a blade and then four little flathead screw pole pieces.
Adjuster thingy?
Yeah, but that's a single coil.
Yeah.
But that is a single coil
pickup. Even though it's kind of squattish and fat.
So who was right, Roger or his friend? Well,
hey, let's not score it.
My builder friend thinks the staple is a single coil. Your builder friend's wrong. The staple pickup is a humbucker. But I was wrong in the sense that it wasn't even the pickup I was working on anyway. So what are you going to do?
What a great question.
It was.
Because he ignored the fact that there's an internet to settle every bar bet, every invent ever, ever to be generated.
Well,
instead, he turned to you.
It can be hard. Actually, I found this out the other day. I mean, I already knew this, but it used to be great because if you wanted to know something, you could Google it and find out.
You're exactly right. This is true.
What has happened is that there's so much crappy information now.
They flooded the zone, and it's very searchable.
That you can't get the information you're after. So, for example, I was looking for a very specific headstock decal for a restoration I'm doing, and it needs to be authentic looking. Now, the problem is there are about 5 zillion people selling ones that are pretty good, but they're not authentic looking with the outline of the clear lacquer lines that go around the decal because those were silk screened and they have a very specific look and the ink is actually raised a little bit. But what a lot of people do is they make reproduction decals on
little inkjet or something.
Either laser printers or Alps printers.
Oh.
But not silk screened. I want a real silk screened, awesome looking, authentic decal, and when you try to search for that, all you get is the 5 zillion pretty good ones that don't look right enough. They're not authentic.
Even that exact term. And gosh. So they flooded the zone.
So if you try to Google staple pickup,
you get
you're gonna get 75 million returns of reissue staple pickup basses for sale or whatever, and it's probably hard to find a picture of the guts of an authentic vintage staple pickup, or even find the information that whether it's a single coil or a humbucker or what, you know, definitively.
Well, yeah, that is a problem. I see that. That's true.
I don't know, whatever,
so that's
anyway.
Why you gotta call in just to...
That's why you need
think.
Us.
Yep, absolutely. We'll make something up.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in on your podcatcher.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate it. Keep those questions coming. You can visit my website. That's ericdaw.com and click the contact link and submit your question or comment there. We'll use it as part of the show. The other way to do it is call or text 757-774-8482, and we'll play your message and use that as part of the show. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.